This is Professor Allen, and welcome to the Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will select sort of at random. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents, or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this ninth episode of the Quarter Bin Podcast, I'm looking at Nick Fury's Howling Commandos number 1 from Marvel, cover dated December 2005. Nick Fury's Howling Commandos number 1 had a cover price of $2.99, meaning I acquired this comic at more than a 90% price reduction. The cover is a pretty typical group pose, all of the characters coming straight out at the reader. And against a white background, they do stand out. I can make out a wolf dude at the center, a big green guy behind him, two other dudes, and a red-headed lady person. And even though this is 2005, they all have 90s-style extreme guns. The story, Creatures on the Loose, was written by Keith Giffen, with art by Eduardo Francisco, Chris Justice, and Terry Pallett. The issue starts in the dark night of Afghanistan, where a military unit is discussing mission briefs and attack plans against the Lords of the Living Lightning, hereafter referred to as the Triple L. They are suppliers of high-tech weapons to really bad dudes. The last panel on the first page reveals that these warriors are in fact not human. Inside the large Triple L base, lots of technobabble is tossed about, and we learn that they are involved in some kind of genetic manipulation. The characters then discuss how impenetrable their base is. So of course, on the next page, the monsters from the first page penetrate the base. The next six pages is a fight scene totally tinted in a weird shade of pinkish red, and it's a little hard to figure out exactly what's happening. I'll just give you the highlights of the fight, which is the awesome sound effects that were given. Grr, chakoom, chudda chudda chudda. Check, 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 woom, waboom, chudda chud, chudda chud. Shrek a shrek, crunch, whoomp, brakoom. Chudda chudda chudda, vip, 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 vip. Aiee, katoom, booda booda booda, thwack. And then, ew. And then it's over. Our monster heroes await extraction as human soldiers arrest the Triple L members and perform general mop-up operations. Not even so much as a job well done, the werewolf guy says. It's like we don't even exist. The green monster dude says, technically, we don't. Yeah, well, technically, you're dead. The entire rundown of the team is given later in the issue, but let me go over it here. The issue was about the slow reveal, decompressed storytelling. But the summary is about concision and clarity. The six-person Howling Commando unit is 1. Frankenstein, actually an intelligent clone of the original monster. Later in the issue, it's discussed why the cloning process didn't create different clones of the various individual body parts, seeing as the original monster was stitched together from various, shall we say, donor bodies? I don't know if that's a plot thread that gets picked up later in the series. 2. Werewolf, also known as Vince Marcus. He is a very typical werewolf who can transform voluntarily whenever Mars is in the night sky. What? Wait. Mars? Okay. 3. Nina Price, half vampire, half werewolf, totally hot babe. 4. Nakantu, the living mummy, an undead prince of ancient Egypt. This is a character who first appeared in Marvel more than 3 decades before in an issue of Supernatural Thrillers. Thank you, Mike's Amazing World of Comics. 5. Gorilla Man, a previously existing character. Kenneth Hale is a man trapped in a gorilla's body. He debuted in Marvel 5 decades previously, and had only appeared in 5 issues since then. So this is a member of the deep, deep, deep Marvel bench. He had actually not appeared for 30 years before this issue was published. And I did double check. Despite the presence of a talking gorilla, this is not actually a DC Comics book. And 6, John Doe, an anonymous zombie who has normal human-level intelligence. This is in direct contrast to other zombie characters in the Marvel Universe. So, do you get it? Some of these howling commandos actually howl. And the group does have a human leader, but we'll get to him in just a bit. Awaiting extraction, Nina and Frankenstein chat about their werewolf colleague. "Am I the only one who finds him insufferable?" Frank asks. "He's got issues." "We've all got issues, hon. Call me hon one more time, and we go a few rounds." And then a monster airplane comes to retrieve them. And by monster airplane, I mean a vehicle that's part aircraft and part fire-breathing dragon. Werewolf complains about the smell inside the dragon, but is advised to keep those thoughts to himself. Dragons take so well to constructive criticism. In another plane, S.H.I.E.L.D. leader David Hasselhoff informs a reluctant agent Alan Quatermain that Quatermain has been tapped to lead the new Monster Squad. Dum-Dum Dugan is name-checked as being the originator of the concept of this team, and Quatermain wonders why he's been selected. "Guess I missed that memo," the Hoff tells him. "Memo?" "Yeah, the one where I got to clear all my personnel decisions with you." Quatermain and Hasselhoff then discuss Area 13, which is where this new team will be located. In their conversation, we see that Area 13 is a deep cover base of operations, alpha level clearance, across the board deniability. Primary function, utilization of superstitious dread, if not outright horror, as a shock and awe bludgeon. The short form, we draft monsters. Head science nerd Bradley Beamer meets the pair inside Area 13, and Quatermain, and we readers, are brought up to speed on the Lords of the Living Lightning and the success of the Afghan op. Being told by the Hoff and Dum-Dum Dugan in no uncertain terms that he is being held responsible for the smooth operations of Area 13, Quatermain grudgingly accepts his new duties. As his bosses leave, he asks the tech guy, "It doesn't always smell like this, does it?" "I'm afraid so," Beamer tells him. "Keep in mind that a great many of our operatives are clinically dead." "Wonderful." Beamer then finishes the tour, and Quatermain grudgingly settles into his new job. Beamer mentions that they'll need to visit their off-site warehouse, which houses the weirdest of the weird, another time. At which point we cut to the off-site warehouse, and we see very weird things happening, perhaps an escape attempt? What we're left with in the last few panels of the issue are a broken containment unit with a busted-up computer screen on which we can still make out the name Merlin. To be continued.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
And we're back. A little while ago, I noticed a trend in the books that had been selected for this podcast. Curious, I examined the entire Quarterbin database, over 300 books at the time and noticed the same trend. My collection of cheap comics, and thus this podcast, lacked a particular type of diversity. Not of publishers. I have lots of DCs, Supermans and Warlords mostly, a good amount of Marvels, ROMs, and a lot of books with Dr. Doom on the cover, and a bunch of indies, mostly John Sable, but others as well. And I did not lack for different types of comics. Of course, superheroes dominate, but Warlord and Sable and some of the others offer a nice counterbalance. What I lacked was what I term chronological diversity. Over 75% of the books that I had rescued from the cheapy stacks were published between 1983 and 1995. This is a very narrow slice of comic book history, and I thought that I should try to address that scenario. So last time my LCS ran their quarter bin sale, I specifically looked for books outside that data range. Anything that was published after 2000 I picked up, and the few that were before 1980 also got grabbed. For this episode, I limited the random search to the small number of books from this millennium, and this one was selected. FYI, in episode 11, I'll cover the oldest book in the Quarterbin database from all the way back in 1979. You may be wondering why I'm spending so much of the limited duration of this podcast talking about what my thought process was, what led me to pick up this particular comic. It's almost as if I'm trying to make an excuse for picking this issue, as if I didn't like it very much or something. Yeah, well, I didn't like it very much. For one thing, the reading experience was frustrating. This issue contained 48 pages, 25 of which were ads. In other words, less than half the pages were story. That was exasperating. There was no sense of flow because almost every spread was one page of comic and one page of ad. The reading experience was constantly being interrupted. In 2005, when this book was published, I was not an active reader of new single issues, so I have no idea if this format was common, but boy did it make for a frustrating reading experience. I mentioned in the summary that I was not a fan of some of the art, especially that red-tinted battle scene inside the Triple L facility. But even on the pages without heavy tinting, Francisco's stylized figures made it pretty hard to figure out who was who or tell exactly what was going on. Everything seemed to be stretched out, made leaner and taller, but in a real unnatural way. Taste is taste, especially when it comes to art, but for me it was a bit distracting. But then again, what the art was distracting me from was not terribly gripping either. Some of the dialogue was nice, especially the exasperation of Alan Quatermain being drafted into a role he did not want. Towards the end, he and Beamer, the science guru, have a nice moment. Let me guess, not the command you were hoping for? Not even close. I'd keep that to myself. Some of our operatives here have personal image issues. Are you talking low self-esteem? They're monsters! What kind of monsters have self-image issues? We found that it helps if the commanding officer cultivates an inclusive environment. I don't want to hear this. Here is Keith Giffen doing what Keith Giffen does best, adding humor into a story in a way that seems natural both to the scene and to the characters. In episode 2 of the podcast, we covered a Giffen story featuring Superman, Ambush Bug, and the Legion of Substitutes. And in addition to being a good comic book story, it was funny where it was supposed to be, and fun throughout. But this one just didn't work in the same way, or at least not as often. Maybe the genre mashup that this book tries to pull off is part of the problem. Horror characters, paramilitary action adventure, attempts at humorous dialogue. It's a tough combo, and this issue tries, but it falls a bit short. Between reading this issue for the first time and preparing this episode, I have seen the Howling Commandos in another medium. They were featured in a recent episode of Ultimate Spider-Man, the animated series, which my family really enjoys, in which Emily and I have mentioned in at least two episodes of our Short Box Showcase podcast. In that episode, Frankenstein, the Living Mummy, and Werewolf by Night team up with Spidey's buddies and Blade the Vampire Hunter, a really good choice. All under the direction of Shieldhead Sam Jackson, voiced by Chi McBride. Anyway, that two-part Halloween episode softened my feelings on the Commandos as potentially solid characters, but it didn't help my overall view of this specific issue. I also have to confess that my reaction to this comic may be overly negative in a totally unfair way. I acknowledge this completely. But one of my favorite titles in DC's New 52 was Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, which is pretty much this exact concept. Now, I really like that title, and it did last 10 more issues than this one, making it all the way to number 16 before being canceled. And even though Agent of Shade came 6 years after this book, I read that one first, and probably somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm upset that this book copied that one, even though in the front of my mind I know the truth is the exact opposite. So I might be being a little unfair, but still, I just didn't think that this issue did what a good comic should do, especially a good number one. Other than maybe Quatermain, I'm just not interested in finding out what happens to these characters in future issues. The verdict on Nick Fury's Howling Commandos number one? Well, a comic being worth a quarter or not is a really low bar. If I'd paid a buck for this, I'd be upset, and maybe at 50 cents I'd feel bad. But it's worth a quarter, though just barely. We've all read bad comic books, books that make us angry that we'd wasted our time and money, ones that we shake our heads at or throw across the room in frustration. This was definitely not one of those. It was the least enjoyable of the 9 books I've read for the podcast so far, but it wasn't bad in that sense that bad comic books are. It just missed the mark a bit, and I don't expect to pick up the other 6 issues in the series, if they do show up in the quarter bins. That wraps up my coverage of Nick Fury's Howling Commandos number 1, bringing episode 9 of the Quarterbin podcast to a close. In episode 10, I'll be doing something just a little bit different. Come back in a bit and find out what that is. If you have any questions or comments about this issue or the podcast, feel free to contact me. Until then, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the Quarterbin. The Quarterbin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening. Professor!